Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and with us today, and in this segment discussing human trafficking and immigration enforcement issues, is John Morton, Assistant Secretary for U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Also joining us from IBM is Dave Abel. John, according to the U.S. Department of State, an estimated 800,000 men, women, and children are smuggled across international borders every year. Many of these victims are subsequently trafficked into prostitution or other forced labor situations. What are ICE's efforts to fight human trafficking and smuggling, and to what extent has ICE made significant progress in fighting these forms of modern-day slavery?
I think that human trafficking and the related problem of abusive and indifferent alien smuggling is one of the great challenges of our time. It's a very serious problem. It occurs on a grand scale. It occurs outside of the reach of federal law enforcement in many, many instances. We have a problem here in the United States, and there's an even bigger problem elsewhere. The good news is that ICE has very robust investigative capabilities here and very important authorities. It's one of our central criminal responsibilities on the immigration side. We work very closely with the Department of Justice to investigate and prosecute these cases. We also work well with the FBI, which is the other principal investigator in this area. We do a lot of work in the related areas of child exploitation and child sex tourism. These things all tend to come together. And because we are the nation's principal investigators, indeed almost exclusive investigator of international alien smuggling, we come across these problems regularly, and we have the skills and expertise to tackle them. What are we doing? Well, we have the Human Smuggling and Trafficking Center. ICE is the chair of that center that's devoted to trying to identify the groups and routes that are used to traffic people to the United States. We're working very closely with the Civil Rights Division in the United States. We're working increasingly with our international partners. We just conducted training for foreign law enforcement and foreign non-governmental organizations interested in this issue. We're going to do some more. The new ambassador for trafficking, Lou DeBaca, also a prosecutor, and now he's been appointed and confirmed to the position of ambassador at the State Department. And I think we're going to have much closer relationship with the State Department as a result. And I'm hoping that we're going to really be able to bring the combined resources of the federal government together in a way that builds on, you know, frankly, the good work that was done in the previous administration on this score, and just to go after this pernicious illegal activity.
So I was reading an article the other day around a massive black market that has emerged around fraudulent identification and travel documents. And I would imagine that this is a relatively big issue in your mission. To what extent does the Document and Benefit Fraud Task Force play into your agency's overall response to this issue and this phenomena?
Well, first of all, you're right. It's a big problem. Fraudulent documents are all too common. They're of great concern as we try to secure the borders and prevent criminals and terrorists and others from entering the country. If we are going to have good border security, if we're going to have serious worksite enforcement, if we're going to have good immigration and customs controls, we need our identity documents to be secure. We need secure passports, we need secure licenses, birth certificates, all of the things that are used to engage in interactions with the state. The problem is significant enough that we long ago recognized that ICE trying to do this alone was not going to get the job done. And so that's where we came up with the concept for the Document and Benefit Fraud Task Force. As it turns out, the very first one was in the Eastern District of Virginia, where I happened to be a prosecutor, and I was the prosecutor assigned to that task force. And we did a number of very, very large cases in Virginia. It worked well. We brought together federal law enforcement agencies, the FBI, ICE, with a number of state law enforcement agencies, local police departments. Fairfax County, for example, was a critical member of our team, did much of the work. And we married that with the considerable power of the United States Attorney's Office. We did a number of very sophisticated investigations involving undercover operations, and we brought a lot of people to justice. And that model worked well. And so as an agency, ICE, long before I ever got there, began to replicate the task force concept elsewhere, and it's been successful. I intend to continue to support it, particularly where you have large organized assaults on the integrity of the system. For example, major visa frauds or major passport frauds, we absolutely have to have a firm response. The integrity of the system falls apart if you don't.
The opportunity to work, it's a powerful magnet that draws many people to our country illegally. DHS recently released workforce enforcement guidance to your agents in the field. Can you outline this new strategy for us and its goal and just tell us a little bit about what it emphasizes?
Sure. My view is that if we are going to make any sustained headway when it comes to restoring our borders and dealing with illegal immigration, we are going to have serious worksite enforcement. And so our aim, my aim, the Secretary's aim, is to develop a truly national program to deter the unlawful employment of individuals. How are we going to do that? Well, we're going to do that by marshaling all of the statutory authorities that are assigned to the Department of Homeland Security, mainly through ICE, to, on the one hand, investigate and deter those who are knowingly violating the law, and on the other, to work with and encourage the many, many employers who want to do it right and want to comply voluntarily with the requirements imposed by law. In terms of our new strategy, you will see and are seeing a shift in focus to the employer. And that's simply a recognition that if we're going to make a significant change, which is what my aim is, I don't want to make just a marginal incremental change. I want to make a real change in the practice of employers. We've got to focus on employers first and foremost, and not simply on identifying and arresting the aliens who may be working illegally. We're going to do that through investigating the employers who knowingly violate the law for criminal violations. We're going to do it by investigating them for civil violations. We have very strong civil enforcement powers. They fell into disuse a few years ago to the point where ICE issued no fines whatsoever. That's changing, and we are going to be in a situation where we're back to exercising our civil enforcement powers and levying significant fines against those employers who don't comply. We're going to conduct I-9 audits. As you may know, we just launched a round of over 650 I-9 audits, more in one single operation than was done all of last year. We're doing that to signal in open, transparent terms that we're serious about this, that there is a requirement for employers to verify that their employees have work authorization, and that extends to everyone, citizen, lawful permanent resident, or immigrant on other status, and that we expect people to play by the rules and fill out the I-9s, and we're going to come and we're going to check. At the very same time, there is no one in the country who will be a greater supporter of voluntary compliance by employers. I want employers who are trying to comply with the law to look upon me as a partner, and E-Verify is an important part of that. That's the electronic verification program that allows employers to verify whether someone whom they are hiring or employing has work authorization. I want to reach out to those employers who want to go above and beyond E-Verify to work with us to make sure that their employees are here lawfully and have work authorization. The country is better served the more voluntary compliance we have. It makes much more sense for the taxpayer. It makes much more sense for ICE for compliance to come voluntarily rather than as a result of special agents going out and visiting people, executing search warrants, or bringing charges against them. The reality of the situation is there is a sustained group of people who want to violate the law, and we're going to continue to investigate them, and we're going to continue to seek to prosecute them if they do so, particularly if they do so on a large scale or they engage in abusive employment practices. I don't mean to suggest in any naive way that there's not going to be a need for ICE to engage in aggressive investigation. I think there always will be, but the point is that we want to be good partners to the overwhelming majority of employers who want to play by the rules.
It's interesting that we've talked significantly about physical things. We've talked about people and money. We've talked about weapons. But one of the areas that we haven't touched on yet is the internet. And the internet provides a tool for interconnectivity across borders. It also provides a tool for exploitation, for cybercrime, and for other types of crime. Can you tell us a little bit about what ICE is doing through the Cybercrime Center, or C3, to combat cybercrime?
Yes. Obviously, the internet is one of the great innovations of our time, and I say that in a very positive way. Transformed all of our lives and generally for the good. But there is a darker side to it, and it has facilitated a whole host of crimes, and many things that occurred in the mail now occur on the internet. Child pornography is a classic example. 30 or 40 years ago, it would have been magazines with pictures transmitted through the mail between people. Now it's all done over the internet, via email exchange, etc. So it's the same kinds of crimes, just done in a different form, in a very powerful form, in a forum that exists simultaneously at once all around the world, which poses unique challenges for us at law enforcement. We're very fortunate as a law enforcement agency to have the Cybercrime Center. It's a specialized center that focuses on computer forensics, internet analysis, and it enables us to follow much of our traditional crime from the street and now into the internet, and to investigate it just the way we might otherwise have in the past. It's particularly helpful to us in the areas of child pornography and exploitation, but it's equally useful in other areas. For example, we were just talking about document and benefit fraud. That occurs with regularity on the corner of 4th and Main, but it also occurs with regularity in cyberspace. People are openly selling stolen and counterfeit documents on the internet, and we need a sophisticated means like we have at C3 to sort of investigate those crimes and try to bring the perpetrators to justice.
John, we've talked about your roles in investigation, capture, and prosecution of violations of immigration and customs laws, but I also understand that ICE is responsible for one of the largest, most transient, and diverse detainee populations in U.S. custody. What are your plans to reform the immigration detention system to make the system and removal process more efficient, effective, and humane?
I have fairly strong thoughts on that matter. I have fairly aggressive plans. You're right, we run a very large detention system. On any given day, we have about 32,000 people in custody. On average, it works out to about 400,000 people a year. We detain those people in over 350 facilities throughout the United States. Most of those facilities are actually city and county jails or private contract facilities that we use by contract. Immigration detention is a civil function. It is not a penal function. Over the years, however, the system has largely become dependent on excess jail space. And so you have not had a detention system that was designed to meet the immediate statutory responsibility and powers of the agency. And this is a problem that has not been in the making for the last 2 years. It's been a problem that's been in the making for decades. And I want to use my time as Assistant Secretary to deal with that problem in a very open and forthright way, given the amount of money that the agency spends on detention. In my view, you know, we ought to have detention facilities that are designed for the particular populations that we detain, which are sometimes the same population as the penal system, but often not. We detain everybody, you know, people all the way from someone just coming at the airport with bad documents who's a serious risk of flight to hardened criminals who are coming out of jail and need to go home. And we need our facilities to recognize that variety, recognize that people don't always need to be detained in the same setting, and to have facilities that provide for good medical care and custodial care for a population that is generally held for much shorter periods than people who are incarcerated, who are held for long periods of time. So I'm going to spend a lot of time working on that. Just to be clear, this isn't about not detaining people. ICE is going to continue to detain people on a large scale. It's a very important power of immigration enforcement. It's a necessary power. Many, many of the people that we encounter as part of our duties are either a serious risk of flight or a real danger to the community. We're increasingly detaining very serious criminal offenders who are coming out of state, local, and city jails, and those people need to be detained. So this is about designing a more efficient and well-designed civil immigration detention system than it is about not detaining people. We're going to continue to detain people. We're going to continue to detain them on the same levels that we have before. We're just going to do it differently in better designed facilities, and we're going to try to have more efficiency and thought for the taxpayer and those people involved.
So it's really about better matching the system to the mission that you have at hand.
Absolutely, and doing it in an efficient way. And, you know, right now, as I said before, we've got over 350 different facilities that we use. It's not clear to me that we need to have quite that many.
What does the future hold for the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement? We will ask John Morton, Assistant Secretary for ICE, to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.